This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Now, Lekkomäki passes it out to center. Miller tips it into the Carolina end. Tokarski out of the goal, gave it away to Besser, who threw it right back to the net. And Dustin Tokarski slid back into his crease to make the save and cover up for the whistle. Svechnikov out the right wing side, pushed to the corner by Carson Soucy. Svechnikov drives to the front. He scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Svechnikov out the right wing side, pushed to the corner by Carson Soucy. Svechnikov drives to the front. He scores! A power move to the middle of the ice by Andrei Svechnikov, who beats Demko stick side to give the Hurricanes a 2-0 lead.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 2-0, get blanked yet again, this time in Carolina against the Hurricanes. The offense non-existent tonight. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. We are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation, fresh off calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor tonight. The Canucks, as you heard, four straight losses and having a very hard time scoring. They've had one or fewer goals in four of their last six games, really drying up. And the shots aren't getting through, and certainly not counting.
I think you said shots more than they've taken tonight.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. The Canucks tonight, Bick, had 65 shot attempts. 15 made it on goal. So 50 of their shot attempts didn't even get to the goal tonight.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes, man. That is tough. And again, we got some stats here we'll throw your way through the course of the evening. But yeah, like that, it felt like that and it looked like that the whole way through. It was not a pretty performance by any stretch of the imagination. And it just looks lethargic. It looks uninspired.
Uninspired is a better word.
The
yeah.
offensive creation. Because look, they skated and they tried, but man, you need like a plan B. To be honest, you need a plan A.
Yeah.
Because plan A is done. You need to scrap like whatever this offensive idea is meant to be, and come up with something new.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what the game plan is going to be moving forward here, because they've been trying to do the same thing and it's not really leading anywhere. I'd stop short of calling it insanity, but their approach is not getting them anywhere. Let's welcome in Randeep Janda into the conversation here, Randeep. And you know, defensively tonight wasn't like a problematic game, and you know, we'll talk about this as the show goes on. Like, they've done some good things defensively, but offensively it seems like they're just getting less and less potent. And even with Pettersson back tonight, and you know. I hesitate to say he had a good game, but he had a couple of chances and opportunities. Nobody else generated just about anything tonight. What's happened to the Canucks offensively, Randeep?
Yeah, there was all from the outside, guys. And listen, you know, we've talked at length about the inability to work it down low, trying to get point shots through. And when you get 15 shots on goal, another 26 blocked. And there was others that were shot wide. I thought there were a couple of moments in the second period where, you know, Tyler Myers has that chance on the backhand wide. Jake DeBrusk's chance wide. JT Miller ends up finally forcing a save coming off the rush. But most of the stuff was from the outside, guys. So this, to me, was a playoff team in Carolina essentially saying, hey, we're feeling it. This is our fifth game in seven nights. And we're going to play a playoff-style game. Early on, we're going to have energy. We're going to forecheck you. We're going to be opportunistic. And then later on in this game, it was the, if you can get inside, you're going to get opportunities. You're going to score goals. But Vancouver wasn't able to do that. Carolina kept them to the perimeter and said, basically challenged them to attack the middle of the ice. And, you know, I think, you know, you guys were talking before you brought me on here. Uninspired maybe is the word, but like lacking creativity, right? And that's, I think, the challenge with Quinn Hughes on the ice. There's moments where there's creativity. There's, you know, that game-breaking ability. But that team game right now is lacking that creativity. I thought, yeah, of course, Pettersson had a couple of opportunities, and I'm sure we're going to discuss that. But outside of that, yeah, not much creativity in the game right now.
Well, as Sat mentioned, it's 65 attempts, 15 shots on goal. It's 23% of your shot attempts getting through on goal. And every single player today took an attempt, which – and again, that's a nice thing to say, and yet 10 guys didn't actually have a shot on goal. And you mentioned it, like, it's not as if they didn't have puck possession. It's not as if they weren't able to get through the zones and get the puck to the offensive zone. It's everything just dies thereafter. And how many, like, zone entries into quick shots were there? How many, like, just chips and chases for easy retrievals for Carolina players? Like, they felt like they made it easy. And, like, one of the calling cards that we saw from this team last year was win along the boards. I'll use the phrase, like, wall guys. But, mm-hmm. like, win low and maintain possessions. And we're not seeing that.
No, we aren't. And I think you talk about the zone time, which is, I think Carolina's kind of doing that by design too. Say, hey, we're tired. We're going to play a certain style. Let's see if you can beat us a certain way. And there's, I think, three moments, guys, in the second period where Vancouver caught Carolina on a 90-second shift, a two-minute shift. But there was nothing really of substance to come out of there in terms of chances, even shots, right? We were talking about that period where Vancouver didn't have a shot and goal for about 11 minutes, and this is despite having that zone time. And the reason that the zone time actually ended was because it was not because Carolina made a play. It was inaccurate passing. It was maybe a lack of killer instinct. You're working on the outside and not attacking down low. So, you know, we've talked about this. I feel like, you know, whether it's on In the Booth, whether it's on your guys' shows, whether it's on this show, that low to high, trying to set up the deflection, and shots are either not making it through, either they're getting blocked like 26 of them were tonight, or they're, you know, not making it through in general. They're being shot wide, or their passes, you know, off the boards, and they're trying to work it a different way. It is looking quite stale right now, and, you know, obviously, Pedersen coming back, it's going to take some time for him to kind of get up to speed fully. But, you know, there's other guys that have been in the lineup for some time, and we're just not seeing that offense being generated throughout the lineup right now. And that's why I think it's certainly a challenge, and it's a worrying, you know, predicament, because you get shut out tonight. You score one goal against Washington, which, let's be honest, I thought there were moments maybe that Logan Thompson made a couple of saves, but were there that many grade A's in that one? Not really. So, yeah, creating offense is a challenge right now.
I mean, the offense has been a big problem as far as tonight's game goes, too. Like, the Canucks wingers were getting absolutely crushed by the wings of the Carolina Hurricanes. Brock Besser had maybe the toughest night of the season so far. It just seemed like he was off the pace, mishandling pucks, making slow decisions. Just didn't seem right tonight, Besser. And I thought Garland was kind of back to overhandling the puck and throwing, you know, hope and dream shots over at the net that end up kind of rimming around, going out the other way. Not having a ton of battles. You know, I thought the wings tonight got completely outclassed by the Hurricanes.
Well, boys, I think we can have a conversation here about the top six versus the bottom six, right? The bottom six actually was playing with speed early on this game. I thought as they were chasing the game, they were the ones that were able to play with speed, and that Max Sasson, Kiefer Sherwood, Pugh Suter line, and even with Teddy Bluger, Phil DiGiuseppe, and Danton Heinen. But, yeah, the top two lines with Jake DeBrusque, I don't really see him kind of having his game right now either, where he's kind of in and out of plays, whether it's, you know, in the own end, another coverage issue maybe on that first goal. This is following up the overtime loss where he's probably the third man in when he doesn't need to be. And you mentioned it. I thought the puck was being bobbled a lot by the Vancouver Canucks. Brock Besser didn't look the most confident with the puck tonight. And with Connor Garland, you know, maybe the first half of the game, he wasn't on his game. He was maybe overhandling, as you mentioned, Sat. The second half, we know he was dealing with some sort of injury. It looked like a wrist. So, you know, what that issue is, what he was playing through, I guess we'll find out or when Rick Tocchet speaks in minutes here. But, yeah, it wasn't – I don't think – it's fair to say the majority of the team, outside of maybe one or two players, yeah, they had an off night, and they just looked out of sorts, and they didn't look comfortable, especially on the power play. And I understand Carolina has the second best penalty kill in the NHL, but, you know, they did look lifeless on that power play, whether it was zone entries, whether it was, you know, Brock Besser behind the net, and he's got time, but then all of a sudden it's gone because he's taking too much time, and Carolina says, all right, we're going to send two guys your way and rush a decision. What happens? It's going back the other way. Eventually leads to chances for Carolina shorthanded too. So just not comfortable from, I would say, the majority of forwards tonight when it came to generating an offense.
As we're getting a lot of texts about, like, again, Rick Tocchet and all these texts coming in here, 650, 650, I think this is where, like, the conflict is. Is this – a talent issue on the group? Because we've seen this group put up some, a lot of goals. Again, it might be quote unquote river hockey.
Maybe not the goals, but they're not generating chances. Yeah, they're like amongst the lowest chance generating teams in the National Hockey League. I can buy that.
And that was even when they were winning, Seth. They were still right. Yeah.
I can buy that the finish isn't there, they're not finishing chances. They're not even getting chances.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, in previous seasons, we've seen, again, the bulk of these guys that have been here, right? Miller, Pettersson, Hughes, Besser, Garland. They've been here for a couple of years, and this has been a higher scoring team. And not even just last year. I'm talking like Boudreaux era.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So is this, like, for you, is this falling on the players? Is this falling on management of how they've assessed and brought this team together? Is this a Rick Tocchet thing of why does it look this stagnant?
Yeah, I think there's when you listen to Rick Tocchet, he's saying, hey, I want guys to make plays. I want players to, attack that middle of the ice. But, we also know that this coach wants to have that low to high. He likes playing for deflection. So, to me, I think it's a little bit of probably coaching, just based on the way that they want to play their system offensively. And the other thing is, I think the lack of execution of players is also part of this, too. We just talked about how, guys weren't comfortable on the puck. Guys weren't, making inaccurate passes, even, that three sequences I mentioned in the third period, which killed the zone time for Vancouver and had a tired, tired Carolina group on the ice. And you basically are unable to execute a pass to the point and allow them to change. Like, that's on the players. I don't know what coach is going to say, hey, that's not the coach's fault. That's a situation where the players just have to do a better job. So I think, working down low, working off the cycle is something that I don't know if the coaches are not telling them or saying, hey, we don't want that, or that's not a part of our system. But there is room down there, guys. We've seen it in the past, guys, and I want to see a little bit more of that from this team, because they got some wide body guys. They got some big boys, and it doesn't always have to be from the point. So I think part of it comes down to coaching. Part of it also comes down to better execution.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, execution-wise, there was a few plays, and Bick and I talked about this during the intermissions, where on their breakouts and on their rushes through the neutral zone, there are players flashing across that are available for passes, and they're choosing to make the safer player just chip it up and chase it instead. And when they, I was mentioning one of the best exits they had and rushes they had was during the second period, where Myers threw a pass up the ice, and it wasn't a great pass, but Lekkomäki does a great job taking it on his backhand, and then instead of just throwing it in, makes a great quick pass as he's being closed down to JT Miller, who flies in and gets kind of a half rush chance shot off. Nothing too dangerous, but
that was the first shot of the period.
Yeah, it was their first chance, but that was a fluid exit, a fluid motion. Yep. That barely happens in the game. And it's not like those opportunities are not there. Sometimes they're not, but they don't even hit that guy half the time.
And that's really, we were talking pregame about that connected style of play. Against Washington, they were better, but still didn't get the results, right? And this is a results-based game where are you able to score those goals or not? And today, guys, I thought they weren't able to make that play at all. You mentioned that one instance, but this was a comfortable third period, comfortable second half of the game for a team that was playing the second of a back-to-back. I thought Carolina, they played it exactly the way they wanted, and Vancouver kind of played into their hands. So, personnel, Bick, to go back to your previous question, I think, we've been talking about personnel even going back to the preseason, even being at training camp. That was always a, can they add another puck-moving defenseman? And we're not talking about a tweener, right? We're talking about a legit NHL defenseman. I think that's going to be something that's still going to be a huge talking point across the league when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks and amongst us. So personnel-wise, of course, you need another puck mover. Hronek would help, but you still need one on top of that. But I do think this is also the players just not executing as well. So there's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
It's now getting to the point, again, we've had this conversation too of like not knowing what we're going to see game to game. And yeah, tomorrow, like Hockey Night in Canada, big lights in Toronto, like maybe you get this energized performance, but games like this leave a sour taste in your mouth of like, oh, like how are they supposed to generate something off of this? It feels like the Kraken game all over again, where they blew that 4-1 lead, where that left a sour taste in your mouth for a couple of weeks there. And even you have the nice Washington game, albeit in a loss, you're like, oh, okay, that's something you can build upon. But 15 shots on goal and just the overall, like, just in general, like, how many chances do you feel like they had in the third period in moments of desperation? It's tough to just kind of live in this environment.
And that's how quickly a road trip can change, right? When we're talking about, all right, through two games, you got half of the points. All of a sudden, you drop a game in regulation, and now we're talking you got 2 points and six out of six possible, and you've got a back-to-back against a Toronto team who got their rear end handed to them last night. So you know they're going to be motivated as well. They're going to be in a situation where Craig Berube, who's a good friend of Rick Tocchet's, is totally ticked off at his team right now because they had a terrible effort where they allowed six unanswered goals in a loss to Carolina. So I think for Vancouver and as an individual, you have to just – it comes down to you have to, you know, for the top six guys, you have to win your matchups. You have to play a connected style. You have to keep it simple. And Sat, to your point, you know, that play by Tyler Myers and the Lekkerimäki play, it didn't look like much, right? It was a simple play, but you have to consistently do that. And I thought early on in this game, the forecheck of Carolina, and credit to them, they have a good forecheck, started to bother Vancouver, but it fell off, man. There was a lot of opportunities where Brent Burns, terrible pass up the middle, Vancouver can't jump on it, lack of killer instinct. There was another opportunity where I think Jordan Staal gave up the puck right in the middle of the ice, and Vancouver doesn't jump on it. The killer instinct's not there. So I think execution is one thing. I also think this team is now feeling the lack of confidence as well, because a couple of moments where they look like they could have an opening and they didn't take it, which tells me, all right, now they're starting to maybe think about it, overthink about it potentially as well.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, as far as, you know, the coaching staff and some of the decisions that are made and, you know, what adjustments are being made behind the scenes, we don't know as far as their breakouts to try to generate a bit more. Those are things that are hard to answer, yep. But clearly it's not happening. As far as deployment too, and you know, we were talking about this during the first intermission, and listen, 2 seconds left and at the end of the first period is probably not going to be the difference in this hockey game, but we talk about deployment and situational advantages. I just don't understand in certain situations that you have an offensive zone draw. Even if it is the fourth line's time to get up and you are still on the power play, there's like a second left on the power play and the first unit had already been off the ice for like 50 seconds at that point, why not just get your best players out on the ice for the final faceoff? We see the faceoff plays they have with JT, he's so good at it too, right? And they'll get a chance off a faceoff sometimes. I just don't understand why they don't take advantage of some of those situations. It seems like they're still leaving some value on the table. And for a team that is having such a hard time generating offense, I can't justify not taking advantage of every situation possible.
Yeah, we all know who the high skill guys on this team are. And of course, you know, early on in this game, the bottom six was going. But when you're looking for a goal, when you're looking for a goal late in the game or late in the period, you got to lean on the guys that their stats back up the fact that they're more likely to get it. They're like, let's be honest. So, you know, generally in these situations, I'm not scrutinizing to the final second, but this team needs, it's not necessarily about, you know, that play specifically, but they need confidence right now, guys. And that top six, seeing them out there in the final few seconds, I don't mind that just because you're saying, all right, I'm going to give you the confidence to go make a play, right? And if I'm not mistaken, guys, I think they've actually taken away a shot from Vancouver as well. They've given them 14 shots on
14.
Goal.
There you go. I was kind of wondering where the 15 shot came from, but I saw it at the end. So even worse. So the Canucks had 14 out of possible 65 shots make.
Yeah, and you know what's frustrating about that, Sat, is that, you know, Tokarski also was not the most confident, right? He almost gives away the puck to Brock Besser. You don't test him. You don't get in his grill. You don't attack the middle of the ice. And, you know, for anything, of course, it's 1 of 82. It's a disappointing result for the team. But it's also a signal of if you're going to be a playoff team, these are games that are going to be very common in about after the Four Nations faceoff, as we get into March, as we wrap up the season this year. So you got to make sure you break through because teams are going to tighten up. You know, the LA Kings are going to play this style. The Vegas Golden Knights are going to play this style. You're going to see Edmonton, who really last year at the end of the season was playing very good defensive hockey. They might start playing that style as well. So can you break through? Can you generate offense in a couple of different ways? Rush offense is not a thing for this team right now. So are you working down low? You know, we know that they have a strategy, but you got to add some variety to your attack. And that's kind of what is lacking right now for Vancouver.
Randeep, I'm going to put you in the coach's seat here. You get to all make right. One change. What is it? It doesn't have to be a roster, like a guy in, out. It could just be like a change on the power play, like Garland comes, whatever it is. You get to make one change. What is it?
So are you talking about for the Toronto game or in general?
Let's just say for the Toronto game, yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm not touching the bottom six. I thought they were actually the bright spot of this line. The power play to me is it's lacking right now. If anything, I would say I would probably try to mix up the power play. I thought, you know, even when JT set up DeBrusque a couple of games ago for that power play goal, that was a moment where you're saying, all right, puck dominant, I like it. I think Garland on the power play, things are kind of dying there right now. You know, whether it's zone entries, whether it's setting up play. So I'm making a switch there. Now the question is, you know, do you switch it up and do you change it up and do you say maybe let's get the shot out there, let's get another player that can maybe take some shots. I'm looking potentially at a Lekkerimäki, give him a look. But I think that power play tonight, guys, was pretty demoralizing. So with Garland, he's just not feeling it right now, and I would probably take him off power play one if just to create a bit of a spark in this lineup. You got to create offense some way, and even if it's on 5-on-4, give yourself some confidence.
Well, it is pretty bold not having a leading goal scorer on the first unit power play, right?
Well,
so I mean that's kind of something to keep in mind. But Randy, great stuff, man. Yep. Calling the game alongside Batch, and enjoy your weekend. And we look forward to chatting with you again on Tuesday when the Canucks wrap up their road trip in Winnipeg against the Jets.
Yep. All right, guys. Take care. See you soon.
You got it. That is Randeep Janda. Great stuff as always. And that was your game review brought to you by BC Honda dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. And, you know, when we talk about that deployment and doing some different things, and I get it, hey, execution has to be better as well, but when you are this inept at generating offense, you have to look at everything. Everything is on the table, right? And small things like that. Garland struggled even tonight as far as the zone entries and making passes, had a couple turnovers and wasn't as good on the retrievals. And I get those are the things he's good at, but I kind of want to have the team's leading goal scorer out there on the first unit power play.
Yeah, it's not a hot take to say, you know, the guy who's put the most pucks in the net.
And he's been really good at doing it on the power play, too.
Should be out there.
You know?
Should be out there. Again, a lot of texts coming in. Shane in New West, 650. Garland's been average for a while now. I think both him and Besser should be on the trade market. Need defense and more speed. Yeah, there are a lot of Connor Garland texts coming in today. This one, not to undermine how good he's been this season, but Garland is a dash 10 in his last 10 games. Do you think Tocchet should get him on the PD line, try to get him going? There's just a lot of thoughts coming in on Connor Garland and Brock Besser so far today.
Yeah, and I think the Wings tonight really struggled. Besser had was this the toughest game we've seen from Besser this year? Like, I wonder. You know, like, and we know Besser's a better player than this. Like, I don't think this is like, oh, classic Brock Besser having a bad year. He's had a good season for the team, but a really tough night here tonight. And there were chances where he had the puck and could have made a play and just made a couple rush plays. The one that, even on Tokarski, when he had the puck, doesn't make the right, you know, could have probably made a better play on it, throws the puck on it. Tokarski stops it. There was a play where the puck turned over and it would have been a bit of a 2-on-1 chance in the offensive zone. And he just like swats at the puck and, you know, you have time, make a play. And he just seemed like to be a bit of a deer in headlights tonight. It was a bit odd because usually he's more composed than what he showed tonight.
Yeah, he's usually one of the strongest guys of like winning the puck off the wall, finding a suitable pass and being able to create something and getting to vital areas of the ice. And it just didn't happen. JB or Jay and Killarney texting in 650. I hope fans aren't calling, texting, and blaming Tocchet for the lack of goals. Miller can drive the net and take on players. He's underperforming. Besser is great to tip, get a power play goal, but he can't drive with the puck to create offense. Same with Garland. Pettersson should be able to do that, presumably being elite, but he hasn't shown that in a year. Besides Hughes, no other D-man can. I blame the management for the lack of talent, not Tocchet. Bottom six are fine. Thanks for the... thanks and love the show, boys. That's Jay and Killarney. There you go.
Yeah, some good stuff there. Lloyd says, how about a rebuild, gents? No rebuild. We're not doing the rebuild thing, okay? We're not doing the rebuild thing. Not right now, at the very least. All right, before we hit the break, let's take a phone call or two as well. 604-280-0650, your toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to North End, where we have Stu on the line. Stu, buddy, what's going on, man? What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, gentlemen, good evening. Happy Friday. I hope you're all doing well. And, you know, the last, I'd say, probably 10 or so games, I've kind of been trying to emotionally kind of remove myself from the team for my own sanity, my own personal health and whatnot. And it's kind of given me a different viewpoint and sort of opinion on a few of the things happening with this team. And so once I kind of removed my heart from the equation, I kind of just looked at the team and I saw tonight, okay, another shutout, not in our favor. Carolina's a good team. I know the 5-7, they looked not 5-7, they look ready to go. I just think that now that we are officially halfway through the season, I mean, I just think we need to make a lot of hard decisions before we could even think about anything. Forget about cup contending. But at this point, it's playoff contending, boys. Like, I seriously do not want us to make the playoffs with the idea that we need to just get things figured out. We need to get everyone healed up and healthy because we still have a year with Demko under contract. But that is a huge eventual pink elephant in the room. We have to figure out Besser. That seems to be the thing that's swept under the rug right now, mainly because JT and Pettersson are taking up all the talking points, it seems, in the world. I think on BBC and CNN News, after the Trudeau resignation, I saw them covering that. And it's just like, this is getting ridiculous how massive the story. I've been watching this team for 25 years, guys. I can't remember something that has gotten this big. Like, maybe the Schneider Luongo, but that's different because there's literally one position. At this point, I think we're all just so damn exhausted and fed up. And it's sad because now, what is our best case scenario? We make wild card two and we get swept by the Golden Knights in two games. We just give up. We say, no, you guys are good. Just move on. Like, I don't know what to do when you look at the stats. Petey's on pace for 20 goals. Miller's on pace for 16. The mystery 10-game absence, which we'll hear about in Aquilini's tell-all. Like, there's just so many things that have just not gone our way. And I'd rather us just punt the season, start fresh and healthy, like I said, and take it from there because we have so many massive decisions on the horizon. And that's not even like beyond Petey and Miller. Like, we have so many contracts to figure out going forward. How do we handle Lankinen? How does Demko feel? Like, you know, Joshua, what's his situation going forward? And our defense is, oh my God, our defense. I would not want to see our defense to go up against a good team in the playoffs, but that's me, and that's my non-emotional rant to remove myself from the equation. But I'll hang up, listen to you guys, and have a great weekend, eh?
Hey, you got it. Thanks for the phone call. That is Stu calling in. I mean, you know, I'm not a big believer in just punt and move on. Like, it's tough. You got to work through a season and see what you do. And, you know, you're at the midway point now. There's 41 more games to go. And a game like this kind of does shake the confidence a little bit because it's a departure of where, like, there was a decent, like, not a decent trend, but they were doing some good things the last few games, right?
Yeah.
And this one, another kind of, as anytime it seems like they're getting close to turning a corner and finding something, they kind of come back to the middle again. And that's kind of what happened here tonight, right? And, you know, we were talking about it yesterday about the trend and how they played and how they haven't had a dud since that Boston game. So it's been a month since they had a dud game and the efforts have been there. And if you go through their defensive performances, there have been a lot of positives. The offense hasn't quite been there. But tonight was like the low point. Like, this was the most inept the offense has looked all season long. And that's a good team, the Carolina Hurricanes. Second of a back-to-back, though, right? Like, there should have been more opportunities than what they were able to generate here tonight. And they have 14 shots on goal. And so let me just show you. So the guys who shot the puck tonight. So of those 14 shots, Derek Forbort had two that get on goal. Vinny Desharnais had one. So like a quarter of those shots came from those two defensemen. Three of your 14 shots came from Forbort and Desharnais. And those guys had more shots on goal than Elias Pettersson, than Quinn Hughes. JT Miller had three.
Again, of the shot attempts, as we mentioned, 65 today, 25 came from the defense.
Yeah.
And 11 of them are from Quinn Hughes, who got one shot on goal. And then as far as shots on goal, yeah, four of the 14 came from Demon.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to play like that.
It's really, really difficult to generate. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your thoughts and comments on the other side. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. You are listening to the Canuck Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hurricanes control. Jordan Staal behind the net for Andrei Svechnikov. Out the right wing side. Pushed to the corner by Carson Soucy. Svechnikov drives to the front. He scores! A power move to the middle of the ice by Andrei Svechnikov, who beats Demko stick side to give the Hurricanes a 2-0 lead.
And that's a big boy move by Andrei Svechnikov as Carson Soucy gets caught reaching up the boards, loses position, is on the wrong side of the puck as Svechnikov slams the brakes and then drives towards the net, cuts to the middle, and lets a wrister go past Thatcher Demko. But for Vancouver, Carson Soucy really aggressive on this play as Svechnikov turns direction, changes direction, and goes towards the net to make it 2-0 Carolina.
Canucks get blanked in Carolina 2-0 against the Hurricanes, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And we are going to get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach coming up in a few moments. A lot of reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, also on the phone boards. Let's get through a couple here, Bick, and what are the people saying on the text inbox here tonight?
650, 650, Lee. Spurs are going to win a cup before the Canucks make another final. Even as a Spurs fan, this sucks. That's a little footy talk from you. I don't know about that one, but nevertheless.
I mean, are the Canucks the Spurs of the NHL?
Oh, man.
I mean, you could make the case.
Well, Spurs have won something, haven't they? It was like 1960s.
Yeah, but that's kind of like, you know, the Vancouver Millionaires won a Stanley Cup. And like,
yeah,
Fury Premier
fair
League
enough,
era,
fair
right?
enough.
Like,
you know. Riley in Saskatchewan. 15 shots. It's actually been adjusted to 14. Tockett can turn his nose up about shots on goal, but this isn't acceptable. They have a third string goalie in net. Power play entries looked horrendous again also. Poor performance tonight. That's Riley in Saskatchewan texting in. This one, Jared and Langley, team needs a trade. These guys are coming out flat. Top players not showing up. That room needs a big shake-up to wake up. No more mediocrity.
All right, well, let's lighten it up a little bit. Cole Harbor Hayden says, do you guys know what our chip and chase per 60 was? Hashtag jokes per 60, hashtag tears per 60. Is you either laugh or, it's either laugh or cry, right? So you choose the laughter instead of the crying. That's a big motto of ours. Like, yeah. We'd rather laugh through the problems than cry.
Laugh the in the face of adversity.
All right, let's go to the phone boards, and let's start things off in New York where we have our friend Bikram on the line. Bikram, back out east. What's going on, man? What are your thoughts here tonight?
How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing all right, man. How are you feeling?
Been better. I think the bottom six, as I think has been discussed before, looks pretty good. Looks strong. No complaints. They're doing the best they can. The top six is starting to be quite a concern. So is this kind of an indication of the performance? Is this kind of an indication that, you know, obviously we need some change, that it's time to move on from Brock Besser instead of giving him a new contract? I'll hang up and listen for you guys what your thoughts are.
Hey, you got it, man. Thank you for the phone call. I mean, I don't know if recent play is a determining factor. Like I've said before, to me, it comes down to money, simply. If you can get Brock Besser signed to a contract where the number is under $8 million, I just don't think you can find better value for that type of scorer. But if he's, you know, trying to get $8 million plus over 8 years, like I want no part of that. So I don't know if the recent play has anything to do with it. The other question I have is, what is the long-term future of Miller here? And do they feel like they are attached to the hip to some degree?
If they roll as a duo,
yeah.
Is that something you want to see consistently?
And let's say if they do, say, move Miller at some point, do they have different vision for what they will want to do for that winger in the center, right? So I think those things would have a bigger determining factor as opposed to the trend of how he's played, because I do think overall he's been pretty good. But that hasn't stopped the Canucks general manager, Patrick Allvin, from challenging Besser and asking for more as well. So we know that they have pretty high standards here.
Yeah.
At least expectations, I should say.
If he's in line for $60 to $70 million, somewhere in that range, you need a certain output. And, you know, the one thing I've said this before, too, based on the dollar figure that you just quoted there, right? If it's under $8 million, I think all outcomes are good outcomes, mm-hmm. right? If it results in a signing at a certain price point, you're like, all right, cool. Like, he fits the culture. He's the longest tenured Canuck, can obviously score goals. And like, a strong player. I don't want this to be like, I don't think Brock Besser is a good player. Like, I really like the player. But you could also convince me that a good outcome is a trade. I don't think that's a bad outcome. And I think we get too caught up in, like, only make one decision and that's the bad one or that's the good one. I kind of think, like, all outcomes are good outcomes here. It's all right, if you find value for it, cool. I just don't see, like, a natural play-driving winger. Like, how many nights have we looked at and be like, wow, Brock really helped out JT tonight?
Yeah, it's usually the other way, right?
It's usually like JT really set up Brock tonight.
Yeah, now Brock does a lot of good things. Like, tonight was uncharacteristic, especially with how good he is along the boards. He has composure, he makes good plays, but a real struggle tonight for Brock, but also in fairness to pretty much everybody on the team. Let's continue on the phone boards. Let's take one more phone call, and then we'll hit, we are going to get to the thoughts of the head coach, but we'll get to more of your thoughts too here. So let's go to Richmond, where we have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Sat, how are you?
Good, man. What do you have for us tonight?
And just saying what Bick was saying, I don't think any of the top six are worth. I don't think Besser's worth $8 million. I don't think he's played like an $8 million player. In fact, I'm getting all so frustrated at all of them, I wouldn't bring any of them back. But besides my point, that wasn't my original point. My original point is, first of all, 9 shots after 2 periods, it was 5 in the first, 4 in the second, is a joke. If Tocchet wants to keep his job, the dump and chase has to go. What I don't understand is these pros are literally taught how to enter the zone properly on a power play. They can't even do that. The Pee Wee hockey team that I played on, and they were house, could probably enter the zone better than they can. Other than that, I really don't think the coach needs to be fired. I've heard the last 10 years, fire Boudreau, fire Green, fire Desjardins. The coach is not going to help this. There's 2 things that are going to help this: a trade, or the management has to go. Other than that, I don't mind getting new management, because this is on them. They had a big, huge leak at the beginning of the year with their defense. Well, that leak now has turned into a flood, and this is what this year has been turned into. Anyhow, thanks for taking my call. Have a good night,
bye. Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Sam in Richmond, very frustrated. Let's take one more phone call. Let's go to Vancouver, where we have Randy on the line. Randy, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Yeah, a lot of good comments. Where I want to go with this is, you know, first of all, everybody's right. I mean, from a scoring standpoint, I think we talked about the last time I called in, is like, you know, 1 week's the defense, next week's the offense, but it always really does come back to the offense. Even one guy in the top 30, and he's a defenseman. Yeah. That we have, right, in the league. So, I mean, that's indicative of where things are at. In terms of the questions about the coach, I mean, what does everybody want? Like, what do you want to do? You want to just open the game right up and let the horses out of the barn? I don't know if that's going to work with this team, because they don't have the talent up front. And, you know, your best players have to be your best players. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what sport you're playing, you're not going to win. And this is the last one I'm going to leave with you guys. Hope I don't get hit with this one. But I've been watching when Quinn carries the puck, it seems to me that everybody else quits skating. And then everything just slows right down, and nobody knows really what to do. It's just an observation. Let's see where you guys go with it.
But just hang on. Are you talking about in the offensive zone?
Yeah, well, even through the neutral zone, you'll notice the guys are standing at the blue line, not sure what to do. And then in the offensive zone, he goes down the half wall and then cycles back. Couple times there's an out, like there's soft support right there, and he won't take it. He's always looking for something a little bit bigger. Hey, I appreciate that. But he's always looking for something a little bit bigger, and, you know, he has the puck most of the time. If you want to have solution hour here, which I think, you know, everybody needs to be more focused on solutions than the negative, you know, maybe there's something there. Yeah, everybody seems to quit skating. Their feet quit moving when he has the puck. As much as it's a pleasure to watch, I think there's a lot to be said about that, and it needs to be looked at a little closer.
Randy,
anyway, that's my 2 cents for today, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call.
On the last point, and like that's why I want a clarification. I do actually agree with him on the idea there, Randy, of like what it looks like for the other 4 skaters. And, you know, we've had trouble at times like dissecting this thought too of like, does Quinn Hughes do too much?
And yeah, like Quinn tonight had 10 shot attempts, 1 got through.
Yeah, and look, I'll take Quinn Hughes doing
for
too
sure.
much a lot every single time. But the element of like, do other guys stop skating? I do think part of it is like repositioning and getting body positioning. Like rather than like not moving, just trying to roll off a body to try to get your stick into another spot. But it certainly would look like not moving. And how effective is that? Is it better to just move into new space? Should you be creating, like, pulling guys out of spaces? Like, you see a lot when Quinn Hughes creeps down the wall, there's two guys in front of the net, two defenders, and just a mass of humanity. And Quinn Hughes can thread passes to the back post and get guys to easy tap-ins. We've seen Brock Besser do that. Connor Garland has scored that way. But, yeah, like, it does look like that at times. And when you look at other teams, just how fluid everything looks in the offensive zone, it can be challenging. And that's, like, this push-pull of, like, how much do you want Quinn Hughes to do? And also, like, what is the philosophy of what they're trying to create in the slot?
Yeah, and, you know, tonight's game, well, you know what tonight's game really looked like? It looked like how the Canucks were playing under the final, was it, few months of Travis Green heading into that season before Boudreau came in and took over from him.
Right.
Where they were really good defensively. They weren't giving anything up, but they weren't generating. Now, there are other things going on there. I'm not saying, you know, he's Travis, talkative, they should fire him or whatever. But as far as they've been good defensively, but they're not transitioning very well, they're not generating much offense, and any offense they're generating is coming from the points. And we know that's not good enough, right? And there are things that they have to start doing significantly better. All right, we'll get to more of your thoughts on the text inbox and also on the phone lines coming up in a little bit. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick talking at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
It seemed like one of those games where it was just tough to get anything generated on offense.
Well, I think we had 25 missed shots when we had attempts at the net, like I think total 50. You got to hit the net. I mean, that's the frustrating part. We had a lot of ozone time, but we're just missing opportunities. You guys look at shot clock. I look at missed opportunities. Two-on-one, we try to pass, miss. These are crucial things. You got to throw pucks at the net, hit the net with people going. So a little frustrated with the overpassing or missing the net.
You talked, knowing that they played last night and 5-7, did you talk about trying to get on them early and put pressure on them early?
Yeah.
How do you feel you did it as a team?
Well, I mean, I don't think they had a lot. They were tired. Yeah, they were tired, but I thought, like I said, we had a lot of ozone time. But you miss the net, or you don't shoot on 2-on-1s, it's hard to win.
What did you think of Elias and his return?
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was pretty good tonight.
Offense has been tough to come by. Rick, is that to start to wear on the confidence of some of your guys, you think?
Well, you got to stick with it. You got to work on your game. You got to keep with it. There's no, confidence is you can't buy at a store. You got to continue to work at it. You got to put pucks on net. Power play's got to come up with a goal force. So, you know, bottom line.
I hear what you're saying about missed shots and blocked shots, but your team's been the lowest shooting team in the NHL for a while now. Do you have to do something as a team just to get more pressure and more shots on them?
Yeah. I mean, there's opportunities to take the puck or, like, hit the net, shoot. Like, there's no magic tic-tac-toe stuff, you know. I don't know. They had they're one of the top teams that shoot, right? And they have 18 shots. So whether they're tired or not, we got to try to generate some stuff. But we need people to move their feet, too.
Did you think you were better in Washington?
I have to look. Like I said, I'm more frustrated with the missed opportunities in front of the net, bouncing over a stick, things like that, where we can't settle a puck though.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after 2-0 loss in Carolina against the Hurricanes. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So the head coach, very frustrated with not hitting the net, missing opportunities, overpassing, especially on the 2-on-1s. He wants to see them shoot the puck. He says there are opportunities. They're not taking them. Didn't get into it too much. Mentioned guys have to move their feet a little bit, have to generate a bit more. But he said it's not about the shots. It's about, you know, shot. I look at the attempts, and it's like looking at the opportunities. And to his point, that's 65 attempts, and 14 made it on net.
Yeah, but he's, like, spoken at length about, like, all right, don't look at the shot attempts, look at chances.
Quality, yeah.
You didn't have a lot of chances tonight.
Yeah, no, they hadn't.
So why are you changing course all of a sudden? It's like, well, the missed opportunities.
Okay.
The missed opportunities weren't good. You got blocked a ton.
It's true. But here's the thing I'll say. He said the overpassing on the 2-on-1s. He's right. Not on the 2-on-1s, they didn't get a single shot on. There was all the passing, right? So it's like, if you get shots on your 2-on-1s, is that like 3 or 4 other chances, right? They don't register as chances because you don't get the shot off.
And we've chatted about this. Like, if you're going to be a low event, like, that's fine, right? Like, you have to find an identity in that. That's all well and good. But then if you're becoming a low event, like the few chances you do get take on such heightened importance that the execution needs to be near perfect outside of just the two-on-ones. And how many two-on-ones were there tonight?
There's a few. I mean, there was the Sherwood-Heinen one. There was the one with Lekrimäki as well. The shot didn't get through. And then there was the one where Besser just threw the puck. He had it. He just kind of threw the puck instead of grabbing it.
But that was like on a quick transition.
Yeah, he was in the offensive zone.
They won possession,
I'm just
though.
Going off the top of my head. I'm just talking
about there
wasn't
a lot. Like,
no, but that's like three. Yeah. But like, off the top of my head, there were three of them there. They don't even get a single shot on. I'm saying, and you're right, they didn't generate enough. But if you get a shot on the two-on-ones, that's three chances that you didn't get.
Let's say they execute on all three, right? Like, we're still talking about under 10, like, real chances.
No doubt.
On the game.
So, and, you know, the other problem was they didn't generate on the power play, right? Like, 5-on-5, that's where they could have a few of those. They only gave up 8 high dangers, according to Natural Stat Trick, created 5. Again, you have to take some of these with a grain of salt to some extent, right? But there wasn't a huge discrepancy, but they just weren't able to generate any real quality looks either. And in the ones that they had, they didn't turn them into anything. And I think that leads to a lot of frustration as well. And you know, as far as him talking about, do we need to make some changes? He didn't really get into it. He's kind of mostly talking about, we have opportunities, but we're not taking them. And we've been talking about, like, do they need to make some adjustments about how they're generating offense on their breakouts potentially? How do you attack in the offensive zone? It seems like he's very much sticking to, we have the right idea here. The players have to execute it. It goes back to what he said in the past, like, we have the game plan, the players have to listen to it. Like, there's a real belief from the coaching staff that if they do the things that we can do, we can be successful. But that execution, like, to me, the biggest issue this year has been the execution part of it. Now, if the players are continually not executing what you're trying to do, what has to give? You know, like, something's going to have to give, yeah. Right? Like, it's either you make some big changes so players can do the things the coach wants, or the coach, and I'm not saying make a coaching change, but the coach makes some changes to get players to execute better. So what's going to have to give here? And at some point, that execution has to come to the forefront, because it's a consistent issue throughout the season, not generating enough offense.
Again, I just go back to, like, what we were talking about there of, like, who took the shots this evening. So again, you can talk about missed opportunities, of course, but if 40%, near 40% of your shot attempts are coming from D-man, what opportunities are you valuing? I don't look at Derek Forbort and Vincent Desharnais and Noah Juulsen and Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers and expect a lot of goals to come out of them. But tonight, that cluster of 5 players ended up taking 14 attempts. Quinn obviously takes 11, and that's a lion's share of it. But, like, they're handling the puck and they're trying to send the puck towards the net.
Yeah.
And it's trying to keep scramble plays. And I get it, man. Like, scramble plays have a level of effectiveness, and they are, like, charted as some of the most frequent goals that happen, especially come playoff time. But, like, you look at the nature of how Carolina generates them and from what areas of the ice they try to create them, from below the hash marks, not bad angles, but, like, sending it from the side and goalies tight to the post. It looks vastly different than what Vancouver tries to create.
Yeah, it does, right? And I know we spoke to Woodley on Wednesday, and he looked at the numbers heading into the Christmas break, and the Canucks were actually top 10 in the league in creating laterals in the offensive zone before getting a shot off. So east-west movement before getting a shot off. But tonight, that was, like, kind of non-existent, you know? And tonight, it was kind of just, there were a lot of shots from distance. There were some of the two-on-ones we talked about, but, you know, very few and far between. But most of it came from the point. And when they had chances, like the best chance they had, there were a couple. The Pedersen, like, hits a crossbar on the power play, but 5-on-5, that rush, the give and go with Garland in the first period, where he drove the net and ends up missing the net on it, that was, like,
there's
good
a rebound
chance.
Opportunity on that same shift, yeah. As well for Pedersen.
But that was, like, a bit different. That was kind of, you know, give and go towards the net. But that's the only time it happened, right? Like, there wasn't any other instances.
And any reference, like, oh, we don't need tic-tac-toe. Like, there's no magic tic-tac-toe stuff. Yeah, okay. But trying to win a board battle and up the wall to a D-man,
it's a constantly the same
that's
thing.
That's not magic, too, man.
Yeah.
That's not magic. It's well thought out by 40 teams or 40 games so far. 41 games so far of opposition defense being able to solve that.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a lot of criticism in the text inbox. This text says, I want to believe in Tocchet, but there is some serious cognitive dissonance. If he believes we generated enough chances to win tonight, it's not just shooting percentage. So just not enough looks, not enough quality looks. And it was a low event game. Like, the truth is, and I know there's something, you know, the caller brought up offense, and we have other calls we're going to get to here in a second, and I know they want to get into this. But I know that you have a take about the issue right now isn't how the Canucks are defending in their own zone. It's the fact that they're not generating anything. Like, it's like there's, like, no, next to no chance generation.
I came in tonight with, a certain level of wariness of, like, going up against Carolina. What would it look like for the Canucks, like, getting hemmed in?
Yeah.
I didn't feel like they were hemmed in at all. Like, we know how aggressive Carolina can be and how well they create turnovers in their offensive zone. I don't feel like the Canucks were hemmed in at any point this evening.
No, we'll break the goals down in a little bit here. But, like, the two goals happened. JT Miller with a giveaway after he comes out and he's on the ice after his penalty expires. And then the second goal that happens.
Yeah. It's off a faceoff.
Yeah. And, like, and Soucy loses a battle to Svechnikov. He just drives towards the net and scores. Like, it's the two moments.
Yeah. Like, their issues as far as, like, executing, as far as, like, playmaking from the back end. Okay, through the neutral zone, they had some issues, of course. But, like, to me, this is, like, offensive philosophy, which comes from the bench, and then the forwards in general not having enough poise and willing to sustain puck possession and create from below the hashes. Like, this feels like the Nashville series in a little bit when they kept shooting at D-men that were fronting, and it's like, really? Like, you don't see other spaces in the ice to operate in and have success in? You thrive off the wall below the hashes. We just don't see them try to win in that way. Like, not exactly like the Svechnikov goal, but win off the wall and go the other way.
Drive to the net. There's so much. As soon as they get the puck on the boards, it's quick to the points again. It goes to your point.
It always goes up the ice.
It always goes up to the point again. It's like you have to have some different ways of attacking the goal, right? And that's just not happening so far.
It's nowhere near enough in general here.
Yeah, Sean Animo says, you guys are reaching for chances. As a radio listener, there was nothing to get amped about. I mean, and that's the reality. Like, we're trying to be honest about what happened. And we are reaching for the chances because that's what it was. You know, and to the two-on-ones, like, they don't even count. But like we said, the Pedersen one was, like, the five-on-five, like, the Pedersen chance.
Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, I thought he was saying, like, why are you guys citing chances? It's like the coach cites chances.
No, yeah, but okay, like, yeah, yes, so you're reaching right. For the, yeah, it's yeah. Even fair. Like, but those are the chances that they had, right? Like, that's what we're talking about. They're very few and far between in this game. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650, 650. We'll get to more of your texts here coming up in a second. Let's take one more phone call here before we hit the break, and let's go to Kelowna, where we have Velvet Elvis on the line. Elvis, what's going on, buddy?
Go.
What are your thoughts here? I know you text in all the time. Good to hear from you on the phone lines.
Yeah, hey, guys. I love the show. I listen to every episode on the podcast.
I don't often
get a chance to phone in. So I was listening to the podcast the other day with Woodley, and he had a really good take on the Pedersen thing. And it really made me rethink the length of time that this has been going on, 4 years or plus, with Pedersen and Miller. I don't believe that that's the issue. I believe that people are grasping, and I believe that people are looking at this issue as maybe this is what's wrong, and I don't think it's what's wrong at all. You know, they've shown in the past that they're great performers. And in my opinion, the real problem is the lack of confidence with the defense. Like, if we had Zdorov and Cole, I mean, I realize this gets talked about often, but when you have, like you were saying, the three number fives, you know, including Myers, your whole confidence level when you're moving into the neutral zone is a little bit hesitant. And I think that that's kind of what's causing a lot of the dump and chase. That's just me personally.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll hang up and listen to your guys' response.
I hear you. Hey, Elvis, thanks for the phone call, man. Good to hear from you. I mean, it's fair. Like, it's a fair point about, do you have confidence to make certain plays, right? Because of some of the stuff on the blue line. They're not transitioning really well, right? Like we mentioned tonight, like there was a lot of get the puck out and it's up the wall. Mm-hmm. Like defensemen sometimes have a pass to make to a forward and they're making the save. Like there was one, we cited this during the first intermission, Noah Juulsen has the puck on the far wall inside his own blue line. He can throw the puck up ice and have a player chase it, or he has a quick decision, a quick flash by Jake DeBrusk coming through the neutral zone. He could have made a quick diagonal pass to him. He would have had possession to skate it up ice and he just tips it instead. It's like, you can hit the guy. Why not hit the guy, you know? And there are even times we cited before where the two forwards are, you know, are attacking down the same wing and one is ahead of the other. You can make a play to your teammate and they just dump the puck in. It's like, you guys are there. play off each other, come into the zone, make a play, you know, and these are things that are just simply not happening. I know the coach mentions too that these are the opportunities they should take advantage of and hit those guys and hold on to pucks and make those plays. But it's very frustrating when those things don't happen. That to me is also a defensive recognition. Like Juulsen's doing what he can do, but we know what Juulsen is. A higher caliber defenseman makes that pass, hits that guy. And that it's clear, like for all the talk about they're fine defensively, they are, but they're not fine generating from the defense unless it is Quinn Hughes. And that's something that has to change because a lot of it is just get the puck out, not get the puck out with control.
It feels like a bit of a twist on like a bit of the Boudreaux era where there was this demand of a lot of the philosophy was like, we'll just make a play, right? And whatever the play was, it's make a play on the puck basically, right? And maybe someone like Andre Kuzmenko was a great reflection of that, of just make a play.
Yeah.
And it became too much of that and there was not enough win a battle. And now it's almost the other side of it of all the plays are individual, but they are winning a battle. Where you're mentioned there, like two guys skating together, are you going to combine to
make a play?
Make a play, or is it chip it in and it's your responsibility, the other guy's responsibility to go win a battle?
It's like waiting for somebody else to do something.
That's, and again, it's not that it can't work. It's like that's hard work all of the time.
Yeah,
and it you might see it manifest in days like today where you get 14 shots on goal.
Well, they spend so much time chasing the puck.
Yeah.
And then when you get it, like, what are you doing with it at that point, right? Like, that's kind of part of the issue.
You mentioned the Pedersen stuff. I just want to take a side step here. Another element, too, that's now emerged a lot of times this season is guys returning to the lineup, big nights, rivalry games. And I know the phrase was used, emotional investment. Pedersen comes back in after six games today. And there's no fire today? Like, Demko's back in after his return?
This has happened no fire? Consistently, yeah. Right? Like, when Miller came back, when Hughes even came back his first game, like, you know, it took a while for them to get going, right? Like, it's been a bit
alarming.
Of an issue. And it wasn't like Pedersen didn't, like, his first shift, he was on. Like, I wouldn't say Pedersen was great tonight, but, like, he, of the forwards, he was the one guy doing a few things. Again, not nearly good enough, right? But it's not like he showed up and didn't play hard. You know what I mean? And the rest of the guys just didn't have it. It's really confounding. It's been a very confounding season
In
so
moments
far.
When you're supposed to get a bit of a jolt.
Yeah.
They've not shown that.
No, I mean, it has been a problem so far. This text says, I have never called in. How do I do it? Well, you grab your phone, you dial 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. We'll take more of your phone calls on the other side, more of your text messages, plus we'll break down the game a bit more, and we'll hear from Canucks players after a tough 2-0 loss in Carolina against the Hurricanes. This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miller down the left wing for Besser. Back to Miller, left circle, one timer held out by Tokarski, and Besser gets it back. Besser towards the goal, passes near side. Pedersen fires it over the target from the right circle, and it deflects around the glass and back out to center.
And that's the look you want. All by himself on the right-hand side, just skied it.
There's opportunities to take the puck or, like, hit the net, shoot. Like, there's no magic tic-tac-toe stuff, you know. They're one of the top teams that's shooting, right? And they have 18 shots, so whether they're tired or not, yeah, we got to try to generate some stuff. Like, we need people to move their feet, too.
Canucks lose 2-0 in Carolina against the Hurricanes. A frustrated Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet, after the loss. What, only 5 wins in her last 18? It's been a tough go for the Vancouver Canucks. Keep your thoughts coming in through our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And I got this note sent to me from Grady Sass, who we know, and he's on social media too, at Grady Sass on Twitter. He sent in, then he ran the numbers listening to the show here about where the Canucks sit in the offensive metrics of the season and where they sit defensively. So scoring chances for, the Canucks are 32nd. Corsi for, so shot attempts for, they're 31st. Shots for, 31st. Expected goals for, 34th. High danger scoring chances for, 29th. So essentially the bottom of the league, like bottom 3-2 in all those categories. Flip side, defensively, scoring chances against, third. Corsi against, ninth. Shots against, third. Expected goals against, second. Hiding your scoring chances against, ninth. So by the metrics, they've been elite defensively and amongst the worst offensively. Like, it's a massive difference between the two. And on the totality, they've been better defensively than they've been poor offensively,
mm-hmm.
like by the totals and the percentages. But man, if that offense even gets to like 20th, forget average. Like, average would be like 15, 16. Like, even get to 20th. It would be a monumental turnaround offensively for this team. And it would make wonders to their results, most likely.
And again, I think that's why you and I have shared some optimism, especially this week, because it's not like you're asking them to get to top 10.
Yeah, it's not like they have to overcome such defensive issues. They have to be the highest scoring team in the league.
We're really just asking them to get to an average level of offensive creation.
Or slightly below average, even.
Yeah, and you'll see a marked tick up in results. But that looks like a very difficult task right now, and such is the frustrations that we see coming into the inbox here, 650, 650, and I imagine you hear from us as well. Kelly and Delta, such a disappointment compared to last year. Jack Adams, a winner, 5 All-Stars, and now we have this. I kept myself in check last year, not going to let myself feel down. I dropped the brick wall, and I'm so let down. It's hard to watch, but typical Canucks, great show, guys. This one from Bob, get Alvin and Rutherford and Cammy Granato on the stage. Let them face the heat. Turn the tables on Patrick Alvin. Tell the players not to face the music. It's halfway through the season. Shouldn't management come out and talk? As you mentioned, 5 wins in 18 games?
Well, I mean,
it seems like it's time.
So we've heard Alvin, or we've read Alvin's comments because he's spoken to Ian McIntyre, to PJ as well. Rutherford went on After Hours. But yeah, like, they haven't done a scrum recently,
yes.
Right? So we'll see.
Nick from the grounds, Canucks have a 547 points percentage since last January 10th, which would be good for 10th place in the West right now. This hasn't been a playoff team in a year. I'm just going to apologize in advance if we haven't gotten to your text tonight, because there are so many this evening.
Yeah, there's a lot. Did you read the one from Norm from Dunbar?
Fire it up.
It says, they were great in Pittsburgh? You mean where Sidney was playing, taking $3 million less per year than Pettersson? Come on. Anyone could manage that. Hold them to the fire. So there's a lot of criticism. And we had was a Sam who called in and said, fire management. It's like, I don't know if you want to fire guys 1 year into, I mean, this year's not even over yet, right? As far as management goes. But yeah, I mean, everyone deserves responsibility when you're having some issues, and there's a lot that they have to improve on. And we'll see ultimately how that goes.
And not to be a cap nitpicking person, but I believe Crosby made more of the percentage of the cap than what Pettersson is making now. So just
facts only.
Facts only.
Yeah, well, it changes dramatically. All right, we'll get to more of your text messages here coming up in a few moments. Let's take a couple phone calls, and let's start things off in New West, where we have Logan on the line. Logan, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey guys, I just wanted to say, like, I think part of the problem is just that we have the wrong horses for the race we're trying to run. Last year, when you have guys like Zadorov, Cole, and Hronek's healthy, adding Quinn Hughes, and Myers actually has a decent shot, all of a sudden, it makes a lot of sense that we can get the puck to the blue line. They cannot get it, like, they can keep it in the offensive zone and then get a decent shot in, because a lot of those guys actually have a pretty good shot. But now we have Desharnais, Juulsen, Susie, and like all these guys, and Hronek's out, all of a sudden none of these guys have like a super dangerous shot. They kind of get a little bit flustered when they're getting pressured at the blue line. Like, how many times in this game alone do we see like puck goes back to Juulsen or Desharnais and he shoots it right into a D-man and it's going the other way? This happens all the time, and I just feel like either we need to start a big shakeup on the back end or play a system that doesn't emphasize our D in the ozone so much outside of Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Logan, thanks for the phone call. I mean, you know, preaching to the choir, mm-hmm. about not just generating offense from the points, obviously. Let's take one more phone call. Let's go to Maple Ridge, where we have Gary on the line. Gary, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight, buddy?
I'm going to go a little bit outside the box here, but after watching that slop that we actually thought was called hockey, I think we need to make some trades. Brock Besser, goodbye. And I'm going to say this. Yesterday, the last game that we, not this game, but the last game that we played, we had a problem with Tom Wilson, 6'5 and 230. The guy that went after Quinn Hughes, 6'4, 225. Have we got one forward that is over 6'2? And I'm not talking about Dakota Joshua because he's hurt. That is over 6'2 and 225 besides maybe JT Miller. And I'm going to say this. You're not going to win with little bitty players. We have got way too many. Our common denominator right now is little guys, 200 pounds, and that is not Tockett hockey. Tockett was, you know, back when he played, he fought, but he also was a mean sucker. We don't have mean. We have a bunch of guys. Brock Besser hasn't dropped the clubs since he was out there, and I'm sick of it. You know, after watching what us against Washington, and I know Ian McIntyre was saying that was enough. Do you think that that would happen? What do you think would happen if somebody went after number 8? Don't you think that Tom Wilson would drop the gloves? You bet you. Oh, there would be a war. But what happens with Hughes? Somebody.
I think you're cutting up there, Gary. Thanks for the phone call. His phone line just died there at the end. So today we were talking on Canuck Central with Reach Bick about, for all the talk about defense, what could the Canucks need use in the forward group, right? And obviously, everyone can use another high-end scorer, but we'll see if Lekkomäki can stick or if Hoglander figures it out and, you know, guys internally here. But one thing that they could use is another forward with some bite. Now, obviously, there's... some want a bit more retribution in the physicality in that sense. I just would like to see another big physical bottom, you know, six player that, yeah, sure, you can stick up for your teammates, but makes a big impact. And I think they could use that. Like, I don't disagree with the notion of this team could use another big physical hard to play against forward.
Sorry, what were Gary's parameters there? 6'2", 220?
Yeah, I mean, JT's is like 6'1 and 220. I don't think he's 6'2".
Yeah, he's like probably about 220. Okay, yeah. I just ran a little search here of guys that are 6'2", 220, of forwards. There's 47 forwards in the league that are that size.
Yeah, so it's one and a half per team.
It's really like a statement of where the game is going.
That's why keeping Dakota Joshua was a priority for the Canucks, right?
But like 47, how many of them, like some of them are John Hayden.
Yeah, guys who aren't even like
Sam Poulin.
So guys who are
Matt
actually
Rempe.
Good as a 30?
Of guys that have actually played 25 games and above, it's 35.
35. So essentially one player per team.
And Ryan Reeves is one of them.
So take him off. Like, really, right? Like, we're talking, like, literally there's enough for one per team,
like,
to go around.
You're right. Like, demand that thing. I totally get it.
Dakota Joshua is one of those guys.
Like, those guys just, like, do not really exist. Like, Pat Maroon is among the leading games played guys of this ilk.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah, it is tough. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. Renfrew, Marco, soft and small team, slow too. Bob and Victoria, Besser is soft. Steve Onsanich says, what do you expect management to say? I don't need to hear them tell us what we already know and what they've already said and seen. We need action, not words. That's Steve-O in Saanich.
Fair point, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm with you, right? Like,
I will say, if they make a trade, they have to come out and talk to me.
Yeah, so they'll talk. You know, both will happen. Bernie from Kelowna says, the Canucks are playing like they're waiting for something to happen. Tonight, it's kind of what it felt like. It seemed like they're waiting for something to happen, whether it's a trade or whatever, but tonight looked like they were waiting for somebody else to do something. Going back to what we talked about, like,
common refrain, yeah.
Like, it was like waiting for somebody else to do something, not you going out and making something happen.
Yeah, no, that's common sentiment, and honestly, it's something that we've seen from this team before, whether it's waiting for a coaching change, whether it's waiting for a trade, management change, like, it's happened before with this group, and I think, you know, as much as people might like players like Brock Besser and some of these guys here, I think certain tenures have maybe run their course, that if there's calls for coaches here, which there have been, how much faith do you want to give a certain group of players, like their fourth coach?
I think that's fair. I mean, to me, like the whole coaching change stuff, I think this year you don't make a coaching change. Come this off season, you have to figure out a contract with Tockett, right? Because, you know, I know Rutherford told us that they have a club option, mm-hmm. or at least an option. Obviously, if Rick Tockett wants a long-term deal, they don't want to sign one. Like, it's mutual to some extent. Like, I think Dreger and LeBrun were kind of reporting. But they're going to have to figure out what to do. And where is his desire going to be? I think there's a conversation that's going to happen this offseason between Tockett and the organization about where to go.
Yeah, because like you're past the point of even like, oh, we'll just pick up the option. Well, you're going to go into the last year of your deal. Yeah, so, like, that's a good idea.
It's either you move on, yeah. or you sign a deal with term, deal, right?
Yeah.
That's, to me, it's like you figure that out this offseason. Like, to me, like the year they had last year, you play this year out. And I'm not saying trade-wise, like, hey, I'm all for making trades if they're there for you. But with the head coach, you play out the year. Now, where you're at the end of the season, we'll see. And it's pretty wild that we're sitting here even saying this, considering he won the Jack Adams last season.
Right.
But it's also because of his contract. If he had another year on his deal, that, to me, it's not even a discussion. But it becomes a discussion because they have to figure out a contract this offseason.
But now, all of a sudden, like, you lay that out the way it is, then let's say a scenario develops, like, this is the last year of Rick Tockett, right? And I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying. Doesn't this feel like the type of year of like how a team plays when a coach is in the last year of his deal?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. I mean,
and so like these are situations that you can manage and try to prevent if you create the situation and we see all this.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of making decisions as if he's in the last year of his deal. He's said things like he's acting in a way in which a coach is in the last year of his deal.
Well, I think he is very frustrated.
Yeah.
Because like, of like how they're...
And I would be too, but like there's ways to remedy the situation that are not being done. And for all the text here that was like, oh, it falls in the feet of management. That's something that they can handle as well.
Yeah. You know, and I like a lot of what Tockett does, right? And when you're going through these struggles, everything is fair to critique and talk about. My biggest complaint the last little while has been some of the adjustments, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can always make some little in-game adjustments. And more than anything, leaving value on the table. Like, we talked about certain deployments situationally. Like, don't leave value on the table. That's the first thing I would start with.
650, keep coming with the thoughts. A lot of questions coming in about Rick Tockett and our thoughts. We'll share more of those on the other side.
Yeah, we'll take some phone calls as well, and we'll hear more from Canucks players, plus Ian McIntyre, plus we'll break down the two goals the Carolina Hurricanes scored against your Canucks. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Post-Game Show on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Eric Robinson, left wing at center, dumps it into the Vancouver zone. Hughes back to it near corner. Pushed to the wall by Robinson. J.T. Miller got the puck free, couldn't clear. As Orlov tees up a try for the line, rebound, they score! Jordan Staal in front. Orlov got it through from the line, but there was a healthy rebound right onto Jordan Staal's tape in the middle of the ice. He had a hat trick last night against the Leafs. And he opens the scoring tonight against the Canucks.
And Batch, this starts with a forecheck as two players go in and attack Quinn Hughes and Vinny Desharnais. And JT Miller has the puck in the corner, and he makes a backhand pass towards the middle of the ice in the defensive zone, causes a turnover as Orlov eventually ends up getting the puck at the point. The first shot is actually blocked. It was either Robinson or Desharnais, and then Staal with his fifth goal in the last three games, red hot to make it 1-0 Carolina.
Canucks end up losing 2-0 in Carolina against the Hurricanes, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar. Keep getting your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll take a couple phone calls as well as the show goes on here. And, man, we do have a lot of reaction on the text inbox, too. And our friend William Langley says he's back in Brazil, stayed up late again to watch the game. I may be wrong, but Canucks seem to be one of the few teams that keep on rotating through several AHL players. Some may be injury-related, but they have not brought up any real Abbotsford D-men so far, like Wallen. And why is that? That's William Langley. Happy New Year. And, you know, this is something that, you know, we brought up the other day when, for all the talk about, hey, the blue line, you have other options, the head coach, he mentioned about Myers, like, hey, I don't have anybody else to play in overtime outside of, you know, Hughes, so somebody else has to play. He was mentioning with Myers being out there in overtime against the Washington Capitals. But the reason they haven't called up other guys is I think there is a level of satisfaction of how they've defended with the current guys they have. I'm not against trying other guys. Like, I don't think Brännström's the answer, right? Like, I couldn't care less. Am I against giving Wallanen a shot? Am I against giving Kudryavtsev or Elias Pettersson, DPD, a chance? No, I'm not against that. Those things I don't mind seeing. Even Cole McWard. Like,
I might be against the two young guys.
Okay, sure.
Like, I'm
fair point.
Yeah.
I mean, let them develop, right? Like, don't worry about it. And
oh, but also, I don't want to bring like young guys into chaos right
yes,
now.
Yes, that's fair, right? Okay, fair point. Wallanen, though, okay, sure, right?
Yeah.
Cole McWard, you can say young guy, but he almost made the team
two years ago.
He's been a couple years now, right? Like, I'm not against trying those guys out. I just know Brännström's not the answer. Are those guys going to change the blue line? Probably not. Like, it ultimately comes down to, do they have to find somebody else? But the reason they haven't made, you know, other switches is because I think they are happy with at least how they've been defending. And we go back to what we were talking, the stats
thing, right?
Pick. And
yeah.
The stats, like, they've been good defensively. They're off. They're not generating offense from their defense, which is a problem. But I'm not sure that the difference in offensive contribution, or the potential, I actually would say the potential of offensive contribution outweighs the negative defensive value of having those guys play. And I think that's how they're going about it as far as the coaching staff goes, right? Like, they probably feel like whatever Wallanen gives them offensively, he's going to take away from them defensively. Same thing with Brännström types, right?
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, the other guys you mentioned a bit younger, but I think that's part of the equation there.
Yeah, you broke my brain with that negative, positive.
Yeah, a little too
side
much
of it.
But I mean, you were digging up some numbers too, weren't you?
I'm trying to do some Excel on the fly. I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. I'll save this for tomorrow.
All right. Well, we have another game tomorrow. Hopefully, a better one
now
to talk about.
Big one
in Toronto against the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see. I mean,
I feel like if I have to make a bold prediction, like, I feel like they're going to have an effort tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I think so too.
I'll say they score four goals tomorrow.
I mean, I wonder what's going to be said like on hockey night about the Canucks, like, what's going to be the latest news? Like, they're trading everybody ahead of the game. It's going to be chaos, right?
Real talk.
So we'll see.
Actually, very serendipitous that it's Toronto, because it was Toronto that infamously lost a game to Carolina,
right,
where they checked like they did tonight,
right,
and it was David Ayers in net. David Ayers could have been in the net tonight, and they're probably winning a game in Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, somebody said this was the easiest shutout somebody had since David Ayers came in and you know, played the period and a half or whatever it was.
There you go.
You know? Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, we'll try to get to some more of your texts here as the show goes on. Let's go to the phone boards, and let's go to Coquitlam, where we have Caleb on the line. Caleb, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Sat. Thanks for taking my call. On the topic of trades, I just want to talk about how hard it is to actually make a trade right now, because, like, if you look at the standings overall in the league, especially in the East, there's not a lot of separation from the two wildcard spots and last place. And teams aren't going to just give up that easily. Like, they're going to keep their assets. The seller's market isn't really good this year. And the Canucks want something really specific. They want a top four defenseman in return. That's not an easy thing to get right now. And, like, eventually, yes, but we probably have to ride this out and wait for Honig to come back. That's just the reality of it. And everyone's just, I understand, and I'm also frustrated as well that we can't go out and get someone. But that's just the reality of the situation. And the fact that Hughes and Hronek were out, that probably drove the cost up for other defensemen as well. Like, GMs are probably going to take advantage of that and charge a premium or a tax on one of their defensemen. And, yeah, but, you know, that's just how it's going to play out. I'm pretty sure if there was something on the table, they would have done it already.
Mm.
And also the fact that we're barely clinging on to that playoff spot right now. I don't think that Alvin and Rutherford want to give up a first-round pick in a year that they might not actually make the playoffs in. So I think they're just going to have to play it out and hope they play better and then see where it goes from there. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got it, Caleb. Thanks for the phone call, Caleb from Coquitlam. I don't necessarily disagree.
I agree with it. We've had this conversation.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not big on, like, don't make trades, like, making blanket statements like that because, you know, we live in a far grayer world than, you know, black and white declarations all the time. If you can find a long-term fit, I mean, do I care about the price? I mean, obviously, you don't want to overpay, but I'm willing to pay a steep price for the right player that's, you know, a high-level defender who can be here long-term. And I don't think where you're headed should have a bearing on making that decision. Like, if a player becomes available that you really like and the cost makes sense to you, do it. Like, I don't care if you're making the playoffs or not. It's like the Hronek thing, right? Like, if you don't make the Hronek trade, maybe you don't get a player like that, and you see how hard it is to find those defensemen. But I do agree that this is not the year so far because we've seen nothing to suggest that they should be throwing assets at rentals or short-term stopgaps. And they haven't, right? And once they get Hronek back, I don't disagree with Caleb's point that their leverage points might be different. Plus, we'll be closer to the trade deadline. Teams have to make decisions. The cost will come down a little bit for some help. The question is, how high have the Canucks set their sights on acquiring a top four defenseman?
Yeah, it's really more about the recognition of, like, this plan didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
right?
I mean, that's clear.
I think we've known that for some time.
Yes.
And that's where some of the urgency comes from. Because at what point do you want to wait and just, like, keep waiting, and then the time to recover gets so compressed that you now have to thread this amazing, impossibly thin needle of, like, hey, we have to go 10-4 here to kind of recover where we are to get to a stage where we feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worry. And that's where, like, my sense of urgency here in the past 2 weeks, you and I have kind of butted heads about this. We're like, go make the trade. And it's a valid point. Like, what trade can you make?
Yeah.
Totally valid. But you keep waiting. I'm just curious, like, what is the – I know we use opportunity cost of, like, roster spaces, but, like, what's the opportunity cost here of, like, waiting so long to achieve what you actually want to achieve?
Yeah.
That's where my concern starts to come in.
Yeah, and I think that's – and I don't necessarily think – it's a nuanced situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's really tough, and I think all viewpoints are actually correct here.
Yeah. No, because, I mean, the thing is, because we don't know what they – I mean, because – you can make the point they are what they've shown to be so far, which is an inconsistent team. Somebody was texting that in earlier as well, right? And that's what they have been so far, but we're halfway through the season, haven't been really healthy. Tonight, they were as healthy as they've been in a long time, and it didn't really matter, right? Like, it wasn't, you know, a great offensive performance from this team here tonight. Canucks boy in Calgary says, the issue with the Canucks is their style of play. In a possession game, they're constantly giving up the puck and trying to forecheck with a number of undersized players. Pettersson does nothing creative due to this. The style does not lend itself to creative offensive hockey. You can't play with a game plan that does not allow for any defensive mistakes. It's exhausting and drains all of your energy. That's Canucks boy in Calgary texting in.
I want to focus on that last bit of, like, you can't make any defensive mistakes. It's a great point because as much as we're talking about you being low event offensively and then the heightened importance those chances that you might create take on, your defensive work now becomes heightened importance as well because you're low event.
So let's work through the two goals, right? So the first goal gets scored by the Carolina Hurricanes. The Canucks did a great job on the PK, killed off the power play. JT Miller comes back on the ice, and he's on the ice with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and Desharnais, is it?
The first goal, it is on the ice. It is Miller, Pettersson, Hughes, Desharnais, DeBrusque.
DeBrusque, yeah. So DeBrusque was the other guy. Desharnais was on the ice as well. And they end up in their own zone, and JT Miller has the puck on his stick on by the near boards and tries to make a backhand pass, and that's where the puck gets turned over and eventually ends up in the back of your net.
It's like Jordan Saul skate.
Yeah, and hey, some bad luck with the bounces, but here's a mistake, a heightened mistake, a turnover by JT proves costly.
Fine margins. And again, you're still even in an okay spot. It's just a shot from the point that hits the guys in front and bounces perfectly to Jordan Staal, but yeah, it's tight spaces and you're making it tougher on yourself. So these plays have to be executed at such a level.
Yeah, and the second goal, is it a mistake? Svechnikov just beats Soucy, and then he drives towards the net from the wall. And
well, it's definitely a mistake.
It's a mistake. Yeah, he beats him. Sure, mistake. Or you get beaten or whatever it is, but and then drives towards the net. Nobody closes on him, and he scores. I mean, those are two moments that aren't great. End up in the back of your net. But again, to the point, the heightened moments because they're having a hard time generating any offense at this point. All right, let's bring in the man who tries to make sense of what's going on with the Vancouver Canucks. We call him the triple threat because you watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Ian McIntyre. You know, fellas, this game and this league continues to surprise us, because on a road trip that starts in Montreal and goes to Washington and it's going to go to Toronto and Winnipeg, the worst weather is in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Really?
What's going on?
I'm stuck in my car. It's completely iced over.
Wait, is that the rain we can hear?
No, that's the heating system.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying not to freeze to death in my rental car. But yeah, they have. I'm sure they talked about it on the broadcast. It's the first snowfall in Raleigh, North Carolina, in almost 3 years. And it came down as a combination of snow and freezing rain. And right now, everything is just iced. To the point, I may be able to offer you a scoop. I'm not sure in the hundreds of these post-game shows that I could offer you a scoop. Have you reported that the Canucks are stuck in Raleigh?
No. So they're stuck in Raleigh, really?
They did not get out. They did not get out. Because as I was walking out of the rink, you know, an hour and a half after they were supposed to leave, I saw a couple of their staff, so they're going to try and get out tomorrow, which isn't going to make the back-to-back any easier against Toronto.
That is tough. So, I mean,
I rescind my four-goal prediction then.
Oh, so, I mean, and the flight from Raleigh to Toronto is not like a quick jaunt either. It's like, what, a three-hour flight?
No, it's short. It's short. Okay. I think it's just over an hour. That's not the problem. And they won't have a problem getting in because they got their own plane. I may have a problem getting in tomorrow, depending on how bad the airport is. But luckily, it stops snowing now. If it gets 2 degrees Celsius warmer, everything will be fine. If it gets 2 degrees colder, we're all in trouble because everything is just going to be a skating rink.
Just use the line I use at the airports. I'd say, excuse me, I'm Ian McIntyre, and just velvet ropes start coming out of nowhere.
Can I tell a quick Darcy Hordichuk story?
Please.
Yeah.
And Darcy's such a good guy. He may not like this story, especially if it's not true, but I like to think it's true. So in one of the, I think it was an all-star break, you know, 4 or 5 days off, back in the day, a bunch of guys took their families and went to Hawaii, or took their girlfriends or spouses or whatever. And everyone was coming back on the same flight, and I guess it was mayhem. And these guys, you know, it wasn't a charter. They were lined up with everybody else without any kind of airline status. And so Darcy Hordichuk shows up late and sees the line, and he's got a sky cap with him, with his bags. And says, oh, no, what do we do? And the sky cap says, I have an idea, sir. Follow me. Next thing you know, there's players lined up, and they're seeing Darcy Hordichuk going past them in a wheelchair, pushed by the sky cap to the front of the line. Sorry to get home.
Oh,
I actually think that is magnificent ingenuity.
It is. I mean, you might get canceled for those sort of things nowadays, but I think it is ingenuity. It's a good way of putting it.
By any means necessary.
I was told that there were no other mobility challenge people waiting ahead.
There you go.
That's good.
He did not displace anybody. From getting assistance that they needed.
Yeah, he didn't take it away from anybody. That's good. That's positive. You know,
yeah. There's a lot of things in the old days that would get you canceled pretty quickly.
Oh, 100%. The line has moved. You know, the line always moves, but it's moved quite significantly compared to where we were about a decade or so ago. But, you know, as far as the Canucks are concerned, you know, we were talking about the performance the other night in Washington and how it was a good performance. They couldn't score, but did a lot of good things. And tonight, defensively, again, like, that's been the theme. They've done a lot of good things defensively. And you have to give the opposition a lot of credit. But why does it seem to be such a struggle for this team? I mean, creating scoring chances, but even getting shots on goal. Had 65 attempts, 14 made it on goal tonight. And again, you give the opposition some credit, but it seems to be a yeoman's effort for this club to even get a sniff of goal right now.
Now, you said a very radio thing there. You know, people on radio and TV, when they use a phrase that we have no idea what that actually means. Who is a yeoman? what's a yeoman's effort?
I think,
like, I understand what it means, but tell me who a yeoman is.
A yoman is
a yeoman.
It's like
not
a servant.
It's like a UK phrase.
Yeah,
is that not a.
I think it's like a servant, somebody who's like, who has to do a lot of work, like in a household, and does a lot of heavy lifting, does a lot of the work and grunt work, but isn't quite, ranking at the lowest level. Let me bring it up.
I could have sworn a yeoman is something to do with like the British Army.
Okay, so here it is. Okay, a servant in a royal or noble household ranking between a sergeant and a groom or a squire and a page.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I was always unclear of the order between the squire and the page, but no, right. I
remember being at the Tower of London, and one of the guides there explained yeoman, and it's like when
people say, well, without further ado, like when they're giving a speech or introducing somebody, like, do you ever use that phrase in real life? Like, well, without further ado, I'll have a Big Mac and some fries, please. Or
none of us had ado. You can just introduce a person.
I might do this for now. Like,
without further ado, here's Ian McIntyre.
Yeah. Or when you go and buy clothes, you say, well, I would like to don a hat and a jacket, please. Like when people say don the uniform or don the pads.
Yeah.
So anyways, what was your question? Thanks for letting me get off on a tangent.
The Canucks can't generate offense. What's going on?
Yeah. Just anything to talk talk about this game.
I think there's a lot that goes into that. And I asked a couple of guys post game. I think he only saw maybe a clip of Pettersson, but I talked to Bluger and I talked to Myers, and Bluger said it's about executing and, you know, being better all the way up the ice. Because if you're better getting out of your own zone, then you're probably going to be better through the neutral zone, and you're going to have a greater chance to possess the puck when you're in crossing the blue line instead of having to dump it in and go chase it. So that's, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that about winning your puck battles, which I didn't think they did well tonight. They had a lot of shot attempts and, you know, 29 blocks and 21 missed the net. But I didn't think they won enough puck battles, and I also didn't think they got to the net with the puck to force saves and, you know, maybe create a second chance or a rebound chance. So I think there's lots they can do better that way. But, and I hate to dump it on, you know, the $20 million men, but the Canucks' best players need to drive this team. And other than Quinn Hughes, and, you know, Brock scored. Brock went on a heater for a while, but he's been pretty quiet on this trip. Demko's been hurt. He's still trying to find his form. But Pettersson and Miller, you know, the guys who seem to be the center of everybody's conversation these days, they would make a lot easier on themselves and the team if they played better. And right now, like, you know, Miller was an absolute beast in Montreal, you know, the 4-point game. And I thought it was pretty darn good. The next night in Washington, you know, he was competing against Tom Wilson and not backing down, and he was combative. JT Miller, I hardly noticed him tonight. Pettersson, I know it's unfair because it's his first game back, but if you look at the fancy stats, which I know you guys have been poring over for hours now, you look at the fancy stats, the guys down the lineup, the Blugers and DiGiuseppes and Suters and Sassons, and, you know, they did fine. Like, they won their matchups. They played more of the game in the other team's zone. But Miller and Pettersson, who were going head-to-head against the top two lines of Carolina, lost decisively at 5-on-5. So, and it's something that Patrick Alvin, because he said what he did about Pettersson in that interview with me a couple of weeks ago, a lot of people didn't notice or didn't make enough out of his statement that the top players have to be the top players, and especially when you need them. Right now the Canucks need them, and other than Quinn Hughes, they're just not getting it. They're not getting the performances. And Quinn Hughes is doing it with one hand, which makes it even more amazing. But they just need a lot more from Miller and Pettersson.
I asked this to Randeep earlier. I'll pitch it to you as well. If you can make one change ahead of tomorrow's game, like a lineup decision or even a power play decision, whatever it is, what's the one that Ian McIntyre would do?
Well, I wouldn't put in Brännström, but I think that may be something that they try. Maybe reconfigure some lines. It's not, I don't know what changes they have to make. Like, they have nobody to go in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Taking Nils Höglander out tonight didn't have any difference whatsoever, like whether he played or not, the way he's been going. At least he wasn't there to take a penalty. They don't have anybody to insert, you know. Lekker Mäki, I thought he had a couple of chances with the puck, but he sure is you know, he's unable to do much at his size and strength right now when he doesn't have the puck. But I would keep him in because he looks dangerous a couple of times a game, and they need that right now. They just have to play better. Like, there's no secret. It's not – I don't really think hockey's like football where, you know, there's so many players, there's so many predetermined tactics that there's a million changes you can make from game to game. Hockey's not like that. Hockey, you have your top players, you have your complementary, your supporting players, and then you have your depth players. And you need them all, but especially you need your top players. Even tonight, a game where they were struggling so much at 5-on-5 to generate quality chances. And again, let's acknowledge that they did fire a lot of pucks towards the net, but they didn't have, you know, a whole ton of quality chances. Tonight's a perfect night. You need your best players to go out there and get a power play goal. Like, when maybe they don't have much else going on, go get a power play goal and see what that does for the team. And on their three power plays, I think they had one shot with 2 seconds left in the first power play, one shot in the second, and then no shots in the third. I don't know. You guys can look that up. I think they only had a couple of shots on their power play.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's another factor, and it's another reflection of the top players, because it's the top players who are all out there on the power play.
Yeah, you're right. So the Canucks had one shot four on the first power play in the first period. They had one shot four on the power play in the third period, and that's it. They had two shots on goal during the power play.
Yeah.
So
they had two power plays in the third, so I think they had another one.
Yeah.
Because Chatfield took two penalties on Pettersson. Right. So I'll give Pettersson, you know, that. I mean, his first game back, and again, I'm not holding him on a night like this to the same standard that I would hold JT, because JT's been in the lineup a while and is coming off two great games. So for him just to suddenly go quiet, I don't have an explanation for that. And, you know, he took the lazy penalty. And I know Svechnikov dove.
Yeah.
But he's always going to dive. So don't put your stick on his back, because he's going to fall down and he's going to get airborne. Like, you know, luckily it didn't cost him. But,
yeah.
You know, Pettersson did draw a couple of penalties. It seemed like maybe in the third he had his feet moving a little bit more. Would have been nice if he hit the target on that backdoor chance on the power play on the pass from Brock, where he was one of the 29 shots who missed the net. Didn't get one on target tonight, Pettersson.
No, and had a couple of good chances. I mean, I think the first or second shift was when he had the two chances to give and go with Garland, and that's probably as dangerous as they kind of were 5-on-5 in the entire game. So not a lot was kind of doing there or going for this team 5-on-5 tonight. And, you know, I mean, we'll see what time they get to Toronto tomorrow, but it is a center of the universe. The Canucks have lost 4 games in a row, and, I mean, everyone knows at this stage they've won, what, 5 of the last 18? They picked up some loser points, but it's really slipping in the wrong direction here. And we know that, you know, it's going to be a lot of attention, you know, hockey night. There'll be the rumors will be talked about. The turmoil with the Canucks will be talked about. And it just seems like another big pressure cooker moment. And if it doesn't go well for them, the pressure just only mounts. I know we talk about this. Victories is the only way out. But the more the losses pile up, the bigger the questions get, Ian.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more you force management into making a trade that's maybe not going to be the best trade that they could make. Because now they're acting potentially out of desperation or from a position of weakness, and other teams see what the Canucks are going through. Like, even if there are teams that, let's just for argument's sake, there are teams that would like Pettersson and Miller, they're not going to offer the Canucks. They're not going to make their best offers right now because the Canucks are under duress and these players are struggling a bit. They're going to see if they can get a bargain price. And I give a lot of credit to, and I've mentioned this before, I give credit to Albin that, you know, with this long scuffling stretch now, he hasn't just made a deal simply to make a deal. He's waiting for the right deal. I think that's the right strategy. But the longer this goes, the harder it is to be patient, the more likely it is to get a deal that's not as good as they would like. I think, you know, it always felt like this trip, and Bick, before we came on, I don't know if it was the last home game or one of the ones before that, where you said, is it make it or break it for the Canucks? And I kind of made fun of you for suggesting that,
sure,
you know, several games before the midway point of the season. But it does feel like this road trip, I don't know that it's going to make them, but it could break them. Mm. Like, if they lose out and they only get 2 points out of 10, well, first of all, they're not going to be in a playoff spot. And even though we're kind of focusing on that, they're still, right in the wild card race. They've lost touch with the other teams in the Pacific Division, mm-hmm. and they're going to be farther behind. So then all you're looking at is a wild card spot and, an unfavorable matchup in the first round against whomever that would be. So this is really big. It's unfortunate tonight. I just thought tonight was not their best effort. And I had been encouraged watching them in Montreal and watching them in Washington, where they lost in both places. And there was some execution problems in Montreal, but the Washington game was one of their best this season. I thought, well, this is starting to look more like the Canucks. Well, tonight I thought was a step back. And the shame is this was the more winnable game than tomorrow night. Like, Toronto's there waiting for them, just like the Canucks were here on Thursday, taking a day off while the Hurricanes were playing their fourth game in 6 nights against a very fast and formidable Toronto team. And tonight was Carolina's fifth game in 7 nights. And this was the game where I think you needed to really lean on the opposition early, try to wear them down, force them into mistakes. And instead, they generated almost nothing in the first period. They led they trailed 1-0 late in the first, 2-0 early in the second. Carolina, as good as they play and defend, like 2-0, they're probably quite comfortable at that point.
Yeah.
So it's too bad the Canucks didn't seize what I think was an opportunity tonight to beat a team that's never easy to beat. Here in Raleigh.
Yeah, well, hey, the Canucks have had in uneven performances, but rain, sleet, hail, or snow, Ian McIntyre shows up, and even in a freezing car, he delivers the goods and had some breaking news for us as well with the Canucks being stranded in Carolina at least until tomorrow morning. So
it's a yeoman's effort, Ian.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, some real happy
lifting. Nice and toasty now, by the way.
Oh, good.
The happiest I've ever been.
Oh, nice.
Sitting
nice.
In the car talking to you guys. I'm now nice and warm.
Well, somebody's texting. Texting in and saying, it sounds like you sound a little sick. Your voice, you sound like it's just like strong, like radio raspy voice. Are you feeling okay?
I do have a cold. Thank you for asking. I had started the trip with a sinus infection.
Oy.
Which I get from time to time, and because I didn't bring my prescribed nasal spray, I tried to get another one in Montreal, but without the prescription, they weren't going to give me one at the Shoppers Drug Mart. So as has happened in the past, it kind of devolves and becomes a cold because there's so many germs in my head. So, but it's only a cold, and I know people are going through a lot more. But I'm not looking forward to tomorrow because I don't know. I'd be surprised if my flight is going when it does. Not feeling that great. I don't have high expectations for the performance tomorrow night, but maybe they'll surprise me.
Well, Godspeed tomorrow, and hopefully we find a way to connect with you tomorrow evening. If not, please be safe. Get to your destination safely as well, and I hope you feel better by tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I got about a 20-minute drive through the ice and slush to my hotel, and so I'll be going awfully slowly because I don't think there's many vehicles on the road, so... I'll get back safely.
Yes.
Keep your fingers crossed tomorrow when I'm trying to get on a plane.
We'll do our best. We do it for selfish reasons. We want you to be on the show, so we'll see how it goes.
Send a tweet so we know you're okay.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, night, Ian. Fellas. You got it. Good night. That's Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. That brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for everybody for listening, participating, being part of the show. Always a pleasure. We'll see what the Canucks have in store for us coming up tomorrow. To borrow a phrase from Forrest Gump, you don't know what you're going to, the Canucks are like a box of chocolates. You don't know what they're going to get. Let's see what they give us tomorrow, right? Let's see what we find out tomorrow. Maybe it's a good one.
You gumped that one up.
I did. I don't have my A game tonight. I'm just trying to do the same thing the team did, Just
Jet A. That's what you did there.
Pretty much. All right. I thank you all for listening and participating. We're back at it again. Tomorrow pregame show gets going at 3 p.m. Puck drop at 4, Canucks and Leafs. He's Bick Nizar. I'm Satyar Shah. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory for listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.